Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So, I'm going to read a little bit, then we'll have some more singing. I'll read a little bit, have some more singing. This section is called Duryodhan Begins His Evil Schemes. The Pandavas began to enjoy life in Hastinapur. They sported with the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, who became known as the Kauravas. Pandu's son excelled the Kauravas in all areas, in strength, knowledge, prowess with weaponry. Bhima was especially powerful, and he took delight in defeating the Kauravas in sport. They could not equal him in anything. The exuberant Bhima possessed the indefatigable power of his divine father. Who's his father? Vayu, right? He's the son of the wind god. Yes? You know better than me. That's why I'm asking. At wrestling and fighting, he was unapproachable and could easily hold off the attacks of any numbers of Kauravas. Out of a boyish sense of fun, he would often play practical jokes on them, laughing when they became angered and tried futilely to get back at him. Duryodhana in particular found Bhima's antics and power intolerable. As the eldest son of the blind king, what's his name? Dhritarashtra. Duryodhana had enjoyed the most prestige in the Kuru house. The Kuru elders had carefully raised him and trained him in the kingly arts, thinking of him as the potential future world emperor. Mindful of the omens seen at his birth, the elders were especially careful to teach him moral codes, because when he was born, there were all these evil omens, and everyone was very, very concerned that all these bad things were happening when Duryodhana was born. And I remember, I think it was Vidura said, this child should be abandoned for the good of the whole family. But of course, Dhritarashtra was too attached. He could not accept the advice of his brother. And then again, when that was said, the evil omens showed again that this is not a very auspicious person. But Dhritarashtra could not follow. He was too attached. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't read. The prince was both powerful and capable in all areas of weaponry and politics, and he was accustomed to being the center of attention in the royal palace since his birth. When the Pandavas arrived, however, all that changed, because previously they were in the forest, because Pandu had renounced the kingdom, went to the forest with his two wives. Who was his two wives? Kunti and Madri. And he was more or less going to simply be in the forest. But as it so happened, the five Pandavas were born. And then when Pandu died, then the sons and Kunti came back to Hastinapur. That's where we're at. Pandu's sons were gentle, modest, and devoted to their elders. They soon became dear to Bhishma, Vidura, and the other senior Kurus. Their behavior was a welcome change from that of Duryodhana and his brothers, who tended to be self-centered and proud and often quite arrogant. Duryodhan quickly became envious of his five cousins. Who was his five cousins? Yudhishthir, Arjun, Bhima, Nakul, Sahadev. His envy grew up like an oil-fed fire when he saw Bhima's pranks. After another day of humiliation at Bhima's hands, Duryodhan felt he could take no more. He spoke with Dushasan, the next eldest of the 100 Kauravas. "Dear brother, this Bhima is a constant thorn in our sides. He challenges all 100 of us at once and throws us about like pieces of straw. We cannot better him at anything. Why, even at eating, he humbles us by consuming as much as 20 of us put together. Something has to be done to check his pride." Duryodhan's eyes narrowed as he spoke. His intentions were vicious. The prince was inclined to wicked acts, and he had been spurred on by his uncle. Who's his uncle? Shakuni, who had taken up residence in Hastinapur. The Gandhara prince had been offended by Bhishma's decision to give his sister to the blind Dhritarashtra rather than to Pandu. Now he wanted revenge. He involved himself in court intrigues in order to find a way to avenge himself against Bhishma. Hurting the Pandavas, who were obviously dear to Bhishma, was one good way. And of course, he would simultaneously be advancing the cause of his sister's sons. Duryodhan was a willing accomplice. The boy saw his scheming uncle as a mentor. When Duryodhan had come to him complaining about Bhima, it did not take much to convince him to do something terrible to the Pandava boy. I will stop there to be continued. Duryodhan revealed his heinous plan to Dushasan. "Tomorrow I shall feed Bhima an enormous poisoned feast. When he falls unconscious after eating, I shall bind his limbs and toss him into the Ganges. With Bhima gone, the other brothers are helpless. We can easily deal with them. Thus my claim to the throne will be unchallenged." Dushasan smiled in agreement. He too found Bhima's behavior intolerable, and like Duryodhan, had also found his own status in the Kuru house diminished since the Pandavas' arrival. He put his arm around his brother, and the two of them made their way back to the palace, laughing together as they walked the forest path. The next morning, Duryodhan suggested that all the princes go to the river Safar for some water sports. Soon they mounted their shining chariots, which resembled cities and had great wheels which rumbled like thunderclouds as they headed out, sending up clouds of dust. Upon arriving on the riverbank, the mighty youths dismounted from their cars, laughing and joking, and entered the large pleasure house Dhritarashtra had built for them. The elegant palace was built of white marble, and it stood 7 stories high. Many colored pennants flew from the tall golden flagstaffs on its roof. There were dozens of rooms offering every kind of luxury. Every room was tastefully decorated with tapestries, fine paintings, and ivory and coral furnishings, studded with gems, and covered with golden cushions. Royal musicians and dancers stood by, ready to entertain the princes. And 100 of the king's select force of bodyguards stood ready to protect them. Once inside, Duryodhan invited everyone to enjoy the great feast he had arranged for them. He led them through the mansion and out into the central gardens. The boys looked with pleasure upon the large ponds filled with red and blue lotuses and surrounded by soft grassy banks. Crystal waterfalls made tinkling sounds that blended with the singing of brightly colored exotic birds. The heady scent of numerous blossoms filled the air. Fine cushions had been arranged in lines on the grass, and many servants stood by, waiting to serve the feast. Duryodhan chose the seat next to Bhima. Then he ordered the servants to bring the food. The dishes were exquisite. Duryodhan had personally mixed the poison with the food he had brought. He then offered the plate to Bhima, feigning love and feeding him with his own hand. The guileless Bhima suspected nothing, and he cheerfully consumed his normal amount. Duryodhan rejoiced as Bhima hungrily swallowed the poisoned cakes, the poisoned pies, the poisoned creams, poisoned drinks, and other poisonous preparations. When the feast was over, Duryodhan suggested that they all go down to the river for sport. The boys raced to the river in great joy. They wrestled and rolled about on the ground, tossing each other into the clear blue water of the river. As usual, Bhima was the most energetic. The poison did not appear to have affected him. Bhima ki! Yes. The prince, who stood head and shoulders above his peers, was a peerless wrestler. Anyone who approached him quickly found themselves sailing through the air and landing in the water. Bhima would then dive in and create huge waves by thrashing his arms. The other princes were then dunked under the waters by the playful Bhima. Late in the afternoon, the boys began to get tired. They came out of the water and dressed themselves in white robes adorned with golden ornaments. Then they wearily made their way back to the mansion to spend the night. Bhima had consumed enough poison to kill 100 men. But it was not until evening that the wind god's son began to feel its effects. As night fell, he felt so drowsy that he decided to lay down by the river and rest. Gradually, he lapsed into a deep sleep. When the other princes had gone back to the mansion, Duryodhan saw his opportunity. Along with Dushasan, he bound Bhima's arms and legs with strong ropes. Looking furtively around, the brothers quickly rolled the unconscious prince into the river. Bhima sank to the bottom of the river and was carried by underwater currents. The celestial abode of the divine serpent beings, the Nagas, could be reached through the Ganges, and Bhima was swept along a mystical path right into their midst. At once, the snakes began to bite this human so suddenly arrived among them. Their virulent poison proved to be the antidote to the plant poison Duryodhan had administered. Bhima slowly came back to his senses As the effect of the poison wore off, he woke to found himself on a strange riverbank, surrounded by large serpents bearing their fangs. Bhima burst the ropes binding his limbs. He picked up the snakes and dashed them to the ground. He pressed some into the earth with his feet and hurled others to a distance. Seeing him render dozens of snakes unconscious, the other snakes fled away in terror. The Nagas went quickly to their king, Vasuki. With fearful voices they said, "O king, a human fell among us, bound with ropes. Perhaps he had been poisoned, for he was unconscious. But when we bit him, he regained his senses and overpowered us. You should go to him at once." Vasuki assumed a human form and rose from his bejeweled throne and walked gracefully out of his palace. A Naga chief, Arka, went with him. Arka had long ago lived upon the earth in human society. He was Kunti's great-grandfather, and he immediately recognized Bhima as his great-grandson. Smiling, he introduced himself and embraced the prince. Seeing this, Vasuki was pleased and said to Arka, "What service can we render this boy? Let us give him an abundance of gems and gold." So here he is, supposed to be poisoned. The poison doesn't work. And now he's being offered gold and gems, and he meets his great-great-grandfather. Amazing. Arka looked at the powerful Bhima and replied, "I think this prince would be best served by us if we let him partake of our rasa." Vasuki agreed. Bringing Bhima back to the palace, he arranged for pots of the ambrosial rasa to be brought for him. This drink was distilled from celestial herbs, and by drinking even one pot, a man would become permanently endowed with the vigor and strength of 1,000 elephants. The Nagas placed a number of pots in front of Bhima and invited him to drink. Bhima sat facing the east, and as he always did before eating or drinking, offered prayers to the Lord. He then lifted one of the large pots of rasa and quaffed it down in one gulp. The Nagas watched in amazement as Bhima drank 8 pots of the divine elixir, each in a single draught. Even the most powerful among the Nagas would not have been capable of such a feat. After Bhima had satisfied himself with the rasa, he again felt drowsy. Vasuki offered him a celestial bed, and the prince lay down. He remained in deep sleep for 8 days as his body assimilated the rasa. On the 9th day, he awoke, feeling strong beyond measure. The Nagas told him that the rasa had given him the strength of 10,000 elephants. He would now be invincible in battle. Vasuki told Bhima to bathe in the nearby sacred waters of the Mandakini, then dress himself in the robes that the Naga king had brought for him. He should then quickly return to his home and his kinsfolk, who were in much anxiety about him. After he had bathed and eaten the celestial foods the Nagas provided, Bhima, dressed in white silks and golden ornaments, was led to the river. They entered with Bhima, and within moments they brought him out of the water near the place where he had been pushed in. Filled with wonder, Bhima ran back to Hastinapur. In the city, Kunti saw her sons arrive back without Bhima. The other princes were surprised that he was not already there. They had assumed he must have gone ahead without them. Duryodhan and Dushasan feigned concern, but secretly rejoiced, thinking Bhima to be dead. The virtuous-minded Yudhishthira believed that others were as honest as he was. Suspecting nothing, he told his mother, "We searched for Bhima in the gardens and mansions for a long time. We went into the woods and called out for him, 'Bhima! Bhima! Bhima!' Finally, we concluded he must have already left." Yudhishthira became fearful. Perhaps Bhima had been killed. Kunti shared his fears, and she asked him again to go to the mansion with his brothers and search for the missing Bhima. When her sons left, she summoned Vidura and said, "O wise one, I am afraid for Bhima's safety. He did not return with the others. I often see an evil look in Duryodhan's eye. I know he is filled with malice toward Bhima. Perhaps he has killed him." Kunti hoped Vidura would give her solace. His words were always deeply considered and comforting. Vidura did not disappoint her. He replied, "Do not think in this way, O gentle lady. The great Rishi Vyasadeva has said that your sons will be long-lived. His words can never be false, nor indeed can those of the demigods who have predicted a great future for your sons." Still, Vidura remembered the omens surrounding Duryodhan's birth. He warned Kunti to be on her guard. The evil prince might try anything. For 8 days, Kunti and her sons waited anxiously for any news of Bhima. Then early on the 9th day, they saw him running toward them, his white silk flowing in the wind. He came straight to Kunti and bowed at her feet. As he rose, each of his brothers embraced him warmly. With tears of joy, they eagerly asked where he had been. Bhima knew everything about the circumstances by which he had come to be in the river. When he found himself bound with ropes, he had suspected the envious Duryodhan. Vasuki also confirmed his suspicions. The Naga king could see everything by virtue of his divine sight. Bhima related the whole story to his brothers, how he had gone to the Naga kingdom and had been given the rasa. The brothers could understand that even though the Kauravas had plotted Bhima's death, somehow by the arrangement of providence, he had become most fortunate. Yudhishthira was shocked to learn of his cousin's antagonism. He considered the situation carefully. If their elders were informed of what had occurred, then there would be open enmity between the princes. Duryodhan would certainly try to dispose of them as quickly as possible. And the Pandavas' position was not strong. Their father was dead, and Dhritarashtra was the king. Dhritarashtra doted on Duryodhana and his other sons, and it was unlikely that he would side against his own sons to protect his nephews. Yudhishthira ordered his brothers to remain silent. They should tell no one about what had occurred. Kunti, however, confided in Vidura. He advised her to follow Yudhishthira's suggestion. Thus the Pandavas said nothing, but from that day forward they became vigilant, always watching the Kauravas, especially Duryodhan and Dushasan. You want to hear more? Besides Gandhari's 100 sons, Dhritarashtra had conceived another son by a maidservant who had waited on him during his wife's lengthy pregnancy. I think she was pregnant for 2 years, if I remember. Took 2 years. And then, after she struck her abdomen and she gave birth to a lump of flesh, and then 100 pots, and I think it was Vyasadev, divided the flesh so that there'd be 101 children. And that another was 2 years they had to wait. 2 years. Unlike his half-brothers, this boy, Yuyutsu, felt no envy or antagonism toward the Pandavas. One day, he secretly informed Yudhishthir that Duryodhan, who had been deeply disappointed to see that his plan to kill Bhima had failed, had again cooked a large quantity of deadly Datura poison into Bhima's enormous meal. Bhima laughed when he heard the news. Having drunk the Naga's celestial elixir, he had no fear of Duryodhan. He sat down before him and cheerfully consumed the entire quantity of poison food. Duryodhan was amazed to see that Bhima was not in the least affected. He gazed at the Pandava with open hatred. Although the Kaurava princes detested the Pandavas, Bhishma and Vidura loved them and would spend much time with these five virtuous and gentle princes. Bhishma had been especially fatherly toward them since the time they had arrived from the forest. He had been fond of Pandu. Now he felt the same fondness for Pandu's sons. The boys reciprocated his love and served him in various ways. The Pandavas were also favored by their military teacher, Kripa. Kripa was the noble-minded son of a Brahmin who had adopted the warrior's profession. He told the princes of his history. His father, a rishi named Gautama, had been engaged in fierce austerities and weaponry practice, for which he had an affinity. Gautama's asceticism and martial skills were so great that even Indra feared the rishi might exceed him in power and usurp his position in heaven. That anxious demigod therefore sent a beautiful apsara to divert Gautama from his asceticism. When the rishi saw the semi-clad apsara before him, he lost control of his mind and semen fell from his body. It landed in a clump of heath, and from it two children were born. Gautama fled after seeing the apsara, not realizing that he had miraculously sired the children. Soon after he left, some of the king's soldiers found two babies and brought them to Hastinapur. Sometime later, Gautama, understanding everything by his mystic power, came to the city and explained to the king what had happened. The rishi taught his son all his military schools, and in time, Kripa became the teacher of the princes. Bhishma was pleased with Kripa's teaching. The boys were becoming highly adept at weaponry, but he wanted them to learn the secrets of the celestial weapons as well, so that they would be unmatched in warfare. Kripa did not have this knowledge. Bhishma had therefore been searching for a suitable teacher to take the princes further into military science. None had they seen had impressed him as qualified to train the princes. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra, please. Again?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
One more time?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
All right, now, here is the description of what happened when Duryodhan was born. Exactly after the 2 years had elapsed, the pots were opened one by one. From the first came a child whose name was Duryodhan. At the moment he was brought out of the pot, the sound of braying asses and screaming vultures was heard. Jackals howled and the wind blew fiercely. Without any apparent cause, fires sprang up all around the city and raged in all directions. Would you consider that auspicious? The frightened King Dhritarashtra summoned the Brahmins, Bhishma, Vidura, and other ministers and counselors. He asked them the meaning of the omens. The eldest of the princes is undoubtedly Yudhishthira, and he should inherit the kingdom. I do not dispute that. But will my own son become the king after him? O wise ones, please tell me what is right and lawful. So notice, Dhritarashtra knows that Yudhishthira should be the prince, regent, the king. As Dhritarashtra spoke, the terrible sounds began again from all sides. Hearing this, Vidura replied to the king. So here's his brother Vidura. When these omens are seen at the birth of a child, it is evident that he will be the exterminator of his race. Our prosperity and future depend upon his being abandoned. Do not hesitate, O king. This child must be cast away at once. Vidura told Dhritarashtra that he would still have 99 other sons. There would be no sin in abandoning this child, as the scriptures clearly state that an individual can be abandoned for the sake of a family. A family can be abandoned for the sake of a village. A village for the sake of a city. And the world itself can be abandoned for the sake of the soul. Dhritarashtra was unable to accept Vidura's counsel. He could not allow his son to be cast away. He shook his head slowly and said nothing in reply. As the nurse stood by holding the baby, the king waved her toward Gandhari, and the child was handed to her. Bhishma and Vidura looked at one another, but said nothing. Dhritarashtra was the monarch. His word was final. To be continued at the next program. All right, very good.